Welcome to the Transition to Parenthood podcast. My name is Janelle Durham, and I am a childbirth educator, doula, and co-author of Pregnancy, Childbirth, and the Newborn. This podcast covers pregnancy, labor, birth, and the first few days with your new baby. In episode 6, we'll cover pain medication for labor. Let's start with a super top-level overview just to get oriented, and then we'll go into more detail. Here are the main options for medications: nitrous oxide, IV opioids, and epidural analgesia. Nitrous oxide is a gas that is breathed in. It reduces anxiety and helps someone to relax. There are a few side effects and the medication wears off quickly. IV opioids are given through an IV catheter. That's a tube inserted in a hand or arm. They don't reduce pain sensation, but they do help someone to care less about the pain that they are experiencing. They can reduce blood pressure, cause itching or nausea, or make someone feel disoriented. Epidural analgesia is the most common pain medication for labor. Medication is given through a tube inserted in the back. It reduces pain sensation and also reduces how much you care about the pain you do feel. The trade-offs are that labor is more medicalized with more equipment and monitoring. The most common side effects are slower labor and delivery, lower blood pressure, or fever. General anesthesia, where the patient is unconscious, is rarely used for labor and birth, typically only in case of an emergency cesarean where there's not time to place a spinal anesthetic. Now look at most of those options in more detail, starting with nitrous oxide. Nitrous has been used in the UK, Canada, and elsewhere for decades, but is just recently becoming available at American hospitals, so check with your care provider to see if it will be an option for you. Nitrous oxide, also called laughing gas, is an inhaled medication. About 30 seconds before a contraction begins, the person in labor holds a mask over her nose and mouth and breathes it in. When she's had enough medication, she relaxes and her hand drops away from her face, stopping the flow of the medicine. The benefits are that it stimulates the brain to release endorphins and dopamine, hormones that help reduce the intensity of the pain. But don't expect it to take away all of the pain, it only reduces it. Half of people still report severe pain while using it. But 92% said they had less pain with nitrous than without it. Nitrous also reduces anxiety, helps the patient relax, and may cause a pleasurable or euphoric sensation. This can reduce the unpleasantness of the pain. 98% of users were satisfied with its use. It can also be helpful during anxiety-provoking procedures. It takes effect very quickly. The patient can decide when to use it and when not to use it, which may increase their sense of control. And it is very inexpensive. There are no side effects on the baby. For the parent, there are a few trade-offs. The equipment may slightly reduce your mobility. Ask your caregiver about that. Side effects are minimal. Could be mild nausea, dizziness, drowsiness, or just feeling silly. But anytime you want to stop using it, the effects wear off in minutes. Our takeaway, if you need significant pain relief, then an epidural is a better option. But if you just need a coping boost to help you relax a little bit with few side effects, nitrous may be worth trying. Patients report a similar level of pain relief compared to IV opioids, and nitrous has fewer side effects than opioids. The next option is injectable opioids, which may also be called IV narcotics. The medication given could be morphine, fentanyl, remifentanil, or others. These medications could be given through an intramuscular injection, or a shot, but they're typically given intravenously. A needle is inserted into the patient's hand or arm, and then a tube, an IV catheter, is placed. IV fluids are given, which include the medication. It could be continuous flow or patient-controlled analgesia, where the person receiving medication presses a button when they need a dose. IV opioids may be used for an hour or two during labor. After they wear off, most people choose an epidural. It's hard to return to an unmedicated labor after opiates because they reduce your body's natural production of endorphins. Like nitrous, narcotics don't really take away the pain. They just help you to care about it less. 2/3 of people still reported moderate to severe pain, but 75% said opioids were at least somewhat helpful in helping them cope with that pain. Opioids are less expensive than epidurals, and they are available at all hospitals. The trade-offs are that you'll have an IV, and narcotics tend to make you feel sort of fuzzy-headed. That sensation doesn't trouble some people, but other people really hate it. Common side effects are itching, nausea, and vomiting, and reduced blood pressure. Opioids do cross the placenta, and they do affect the fetus. And if the baby is born less than an hour or two after the parent received narcotics, the baby could have short-term effects on their breathing and on breastfeeding right after the birth. There are not long-term effects. Our takeaway is that IV opioids may provide some benefit for people who don't want or can't have an epidural. Let's move on to epidurals, which are considered the gold standard. Epidural analgesia is given through an epidural catheter in her lower back, near the spinal nerves. The anesthesiologist first gives a shot of local anesthetic to numb sensation, then inserts the epidural needle and uses that to place a very thin tube. Then the needle is removed, the tube is taped down, and the medication begins to flow. An epidural takes about 10 minutes to place and 10 to 15 minutes to start working well. Some hospitals also offer combined spinal epidural, which takes effect more quickly. You can ask your care provider if this is an option for you. Once an epidural is placed, the epidural usually remains in place for the rest of your labor. There is also something called a spinal block, which is a shot. It's similar to epidurals, except it's a single dose, not a continuous infusion. It takes effect very quickly, but only lasts for an hour or two, so is typically only used for cesareans. When in labor can you get an epidural? Ask your care provider what they recommend and why. Many will say that you can have an epidural at any point. Others recommend that the further you progress in labor without an epidural, the better, because the less time you have an epidural in place, the fewer the chances of side effects. Some may recommend that you wait until you're at least 5 centimeters dilated and have a good solid contraction pattern going. People wonder whether it's ever too late to have an epidural, and most care providers say it's never too late, but practically, if it looks like the baby will be born in less than an hour, care providers may say it makes sense to just focus on getting the baby out rather than getting an epidural at that time. Benefits of an epidural. Epidural medication typically includes a combination of a narcotic like fentanyl, that reduces how much you care about the pain, and an anesthetic like bupivacaine, which significantly reduces how much pain sensation you actually experience. So an epidural reduces both the intensity and the unpleasantness of pain. You will still feel pressure in second stage, but that's a good thing as that sensation helps you to push better. Most people get very good pain relief with an epidural, better than with opioids. In one study where pain was rated on a scale of 0 to 10, before analgesia, pain scores averaged 9 out of 10. After IV opioids, the average score was 4 in first stage labor and 5 in second stage. For those who had received epidurals, the average score was 2 in first stage labor and 3 for pushing. So again, an epidural might take the average pain score from 9 down to 2 on a scale of 0 to 10 for first stage labor. You remain fully awake and alert with an epidural. If you end up needing an instrumental delivery or a cesarean, the pain medication can be turned up to help increase the pain relief. Epidurals can also relieve pain well enough that many people can sleep after receiving one, which might be a relief after a long, difficult labor. For those who use epidurals in labor, about 90% are very satisfied with their pain relief. About 5 to 7% are somewhat satisfied, and 2 to 3% do not get effective pain relief. Now let's look at the trade-offs. Epidurals are sort of a package deal. They always come with extra equipment and monitoring. For example, continuous fetal monitoring, continuous blood pressure monitoring, extra IV fluids, a catheter to drain your bladder, an oxygen sensor on your finger, and frequent temperature checks. You may also have an oxygen mask. This can feel very medicalized as you feel like you have tubes and monitors everywhere. You also will have to remain in bed. Some people report feeling like passive patients after an epidural versus feeling like a more active participant in labor before the epidural was placed. Common side effects. Your blood pressure may drop and you may need interventions to correct this. A fever can develop. That is more likely the longer the epidural is in place. If you have a fever, your baby could have a fever. And if they're born with a fever, they may test for and possibly treat for a possible infection, even though the fever is likely just a response to the epidural. Some research indicates that epidurals slow down labor, but some experts say they do not, and that other factors, such as the size or position of the baby, may be the reason for the slower labor. Research does show that Pitocin augmentation is more likely. Research also shows that pushing may take longer. Current research does not indicate that forceps, vacuum delivery, or cesarean are more likely with an epidural than without. There may also be some of the side effects you would see with IV opioids, such as itching or nausea, but to a lesser degree because epidurals contain a lower dose of opioids than you would receive intravenously. And about 1% of people who had an epidural will have a spinal headache after the birth. In terms of side effects for babies, during labor, a baby's heart rate may be affected by the epidural, so there will be continuous fetal monitoring, and there may be more discussion about the baby's heart rate. These are just short-term issues and do not appear to cause any long-term impacts for the baby, although they may increase the risk of cesarean for fetal heart rate issues. At the time of birth, research does not show risks for babies. APGAR scores at 5 minutes, and admission to neonatal intensive care is not significantly different with an epidural versus without. Epidurals do not appear to cause any long-term risks for babies. Research about a possible effect of epidurals on breastfeeding is limited and challenging to interpret. People have wondered whether babies might be a little bit more tired after a longer pushing stage, or might have a little less sucking ability in that first feeding due to the opioids. One study did show that the higher the medication dose received in labor, the more likely that parents would report a fussy baby in the first few days, and the less likely they were to still be breastfeeding at 6 weeks. However, it's possible that any negative impacts of epidurals on breastfeeding could be fixed with a little more attention to the first feeding and a little more extra lactation support in those early days. Our takeaway? Epidurals do provide quite effective pain relief for most people with a very high degree of satisfaction. However, first with an epidural is more medicalized with lots of equipment and monitoring, and there are side effects that are fairly common, so it's important to educate yourself about those. It's also important to note that 10% of people may not get adequate pain relief with an epidural. So even if you're planning on an early epidural, it's essential that you also have a backup plan and are familiar with several non-drug pain coping techniques. Check out other episodes of this podcast to learn more about your comfort options. Now that you know about pain medication, it's also important to check out the podcast episode titled Labor Pain Toolbox. It talks about a tool called the Pain Medication Preference Scale, which helps you to clarify and describe your preference on a scale from absolutely want meds to absolutely don't want them. Knowing your preference and the goals and priorities that shape it are an incredibly helpful guide to those who will support you in labor. For example, in your birth plan, if you'd marked a +3 on scale, that says, I want to use some pain medications, but I also plan to use self-help comfort measures for as much of labor as I can. Then it would also be helpful to describe what comfort measures you expect will be helpful to you and predict what factors would lead you to decide that it was now time for medications. If someone is planning to use an epidural, then here are some tips for getting labor off to a good start. Moving around a lot in early labor, especially using positions that are upright, forward-leaning, and open up the pelvis, as I covered in the comfort techniques episode, will help the baby to descend and to rotate into the best possible position for birth. This is helpful for everyone in labor, but may be especially important for those who are planning an epidural, as it is harder to change positions and move around once the epidural is in place. Waiting to get an epidural until there's a good solid pattern of contractions established, with contractions coming at fairly regular intervals and getting longer, stronger, and closer together over time, will help your labor to continue to progress well. Also, if you're having lots of back pain and irregular contractions, that could indicate that the baby is not in the best position, so being upright and mobile a little longer may help correct that. If someone is really counting on an epidural, then even the milder contractions of early labor may be very challenging for them, so they will need extra concentrated labor support to manage the pain until it is time to go to the hospital. Upon arrival at the hospital, for someone with a pain medication preference of +5 or higher, it can be helpful to talk to the nurse right away about the plan for an epidural. Sometimes they might be able to start an IV early, so it's already in place, or they may be able to do some of the paperwork or anesthesiology consults earlier in labor so that they're out of the way and won't be a barrier to getting the medication started when the time comes. A pro tip is that it's helpful if labor support partners know answers to all the standard paperwork questions, so the person in labor doesn't have to recite her social security number, birth date, allergies, and so on. Note, for someone who is planning an epidural, we may ask for that anesthesiology consult early. But if someone is hoping to labor for as long as they can without pain medications, so if their pain med preference is from 0 to negative 10, then they might instead tell the nurse that that's their preference and that they would rather avoid or delay consulting with anesthesiology unless and until they plan to use pain medication. In active labor at the hospital, use comfort techniques and labor support to reduce her pain for as long as she chooses to do so. Be sure to listen to episode 1, the Labor Pain Toolbox, and learn about the pain medication preference scale and the idea of a code word. Support people should talk with the pregnant person before labor to be certain they understand her preferences and how she will communicate them during labor. When the laboring person asks for medication, support people can help communicate this to the nursing staff, who will notify anesthesiology, and they'll begin prepping for the epidural. Know that sometimes it can take a while for anesthesiology to arrive. You can ask the nurse for a time estimate so that you can plan. During this time, someone in labor needs lots of empathetic support. They had decided that they were done coping with labor pain, and now they need to do it a little while longer, so those contractions can feel extra challenging. When anesthesiology arrives to place the epidural, in some hospitals, they may ask the labor supporter to leave the room. Ask your care provider whether this would happen at your hospital and whether it is possible to stay. If not, then support partners can plan to use this time as a break for self-care. Assuming that you can stay in the room, labor support during the placement of an epidural is vital. Helping her to remain still and calm and breathe her way through her contractions will help to get the epidural placed more quickly. Once the epidural has taken effect and she is experiencing much less pain, it may feel like labor support is no longer needed, but it is still very important to help her feel cared for. The oxytocin flow from feeling loved and supported will help her labor to progress. Supporters can help to keep her company, get answers to any questions she has, offer ice chips or hard candies to suck on, offer a cool washcloth for her forehead or neck, or a warm blanket if she's chilled. Help her connect to the labor and to the baby by using her hand to feel her belly for contractions and listen to the baby's heart rate on the monitor. If she wants to sleep, then supporters can sleep too, but make sure she knows that she can wake you if she needs anything, even just company and reassurance. Place the things she may need in easy reach for her. An eye mask or earplugs may help her to sleep. Supporters can silence phones and ask the nurse to minimize disruptions. Changing positions in labor can help with labor progress. It is more challenging with an epidural in place, but can still be done with support. Partners can help with the epidural rollover, which is moving through these six positions. Lying on her left side, and then lying semi-prone, which is kind of halfway between on her side and on her belly. Then up on her hands and knees, or kneeling over the birth ball. Then semi-prone on her right side, then side-lying on her right side, and then semi-sitting. Change positions every 20 minutes. She could also use a peanut ball. This is a peanut-shaped exercise ball that she can place under one knee while semi-sitting or while side-lying. Ask whether a peanut ball is available at your hospital, or you can purchase one for home use, or use pillows to achieve the same effect. This positioning helps the baby to rotate into the best possible position for birth. If she does not have enough pain relief from an epidural, support people can help her advocate for more. If she experiences side effects, they can offer support. For itching, offer a cold compress. If she's nauseous or vomiting, support with that. She may shiver or tremble, reassure her that that is normal. Her body is still experiencing a lot of stress, even if she can't feel the pain. Sometimes a high block can cause someone to feel like they can't breathe. Reassure her that she is breathing fine. When she has reached 10 centimeters dilation and her contraction pattern indicates that second stage has begun, they may have her do a few practice pushes. If those aren't effective, then the care providers may recommend laboring down, which just means resting until the baby is crowning at the vaginal opening and then beginning the pushing effort. During pushing, the care provider will make recommendations about pushing positions and pushing technique. The support person may be asked to help hold her leg or support her in a certain position. If so, be sure to be aware of her typical range of motion and don't hold her leg in a position that would strain it if she could feel it. After the birth, support partners can ensure that there is immediate skin-to-skin contact between the baby and the birthing parent. People who have labored without pain medications tend to have a huge rush of hormones that encourage them to demand contact with their baby. The epidural can disrupt this a bit, but support people can correct for that by prioritizing skin-to-skin contact, undisturbed time for the first breastfeeding session, and rooming in with the baby after birth. Research is unclear on whether epidurals have any negative impact on breastfeeding, but you can always request extra lactation support with getting nursing off to a great start. If the birthing parent had a lot of IV fluids during labor, that can cause the baby to have extra fluids at birth, and thus there might be more weight loss right after birth as they pee all that fluid off. Ask for a weight check for the baby at 24 hours of life as a baseline to compare to later. Takeaways from this episode. Even if someone is planning to use pain medication, it is still helpful to learn pain coping techniques to get to the point in labor where they can have an epidural, or in case the epidural is not effective for them. After an epidural, labor support is still important and can include assistance with positioning, increasing their comfort, and providing support to decrease their fear about the birth. I hope this episode has been helpful for you. For links to more information about pain medications, check my website, www.transitiontoparenthood.wordpress.com. To learn more about what to expect during labor, birth, and the first days with your baby, check out other episodes of this podcast.